Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about this?
I feel
bathroom?
Like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything
taken
care of.
It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
WOGL HD3, Philadelphia. From the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, where relationships matter. Always live on the free Odyssey app. The revolution will be broadcast. This is the next generation of talk. Now, this is the drive at 5. 30 minutes of nonstop talk with Rich Zeoli.
Yes, Donald Trump is really leading in the polls in the swing states that matter. You can understand why when you break it down policy-wise, just like the voters outside of Pittsburgh. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. Thank you for being here. 855-839-1210 on Twitter at Rich Zeoli. Biden even faces potential trouble getting on the general election ballot in a Midwestern state. I'll tell you about that, too. This is our happy hour brought to you by our friends at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. We're going to be there live for our next show on Friday, May 3rd. I would love for you to join us for that. And I'd want to see a big, strong showing for our first show of the year. Friday, May 3rd. And it's going to be a great day. Great time in Cape May. So please mark your calendar. It's only a few weeks away. Friday, May 3rd. The Zeoli Show live in Cape May. Where to begin? Joe Biden has no record to run on. It's a record that is causing people to flee. It's why I keep hearing the Democrats talk about abortion and Russia, by the way. Oh, yes, the vampiric one, Nancy Pelosi, is back. The vampiric one, fresh from her blood feeding during the eclipse yesterday. It was very easy for her, all that darkness, to just start gnawing on necks. And she is fired up. You look at her, she's got a special shine to her today. You know what I mean? It's like the time that she broke into that blood bank in D.C. or the time that intern came by. It's just a special time. And during the eclipse, vampires, they are happy, happy people because they got to usually wait tonight to feed. But Pelosi was in rare form. So what do you do when you're a vampire hopped up on fresh blood? Obviously, you bring up Russia. Cut three.
So it's who benefits from it? Donald Trump. Who benefits from Donald Trump? Putin. There's, in my view, a connection there.
See? Look at that now. Isn't that something? Isn't that something? Russia. Russia, Russia, Russia. So we're back to Russia collusion. And, of course, we're back to Trump being the dictator that's going to end America. So Joe Biden was asked the question in an interview with Univision and talking about the primary threat. Cut number two.
What, in your view, constitutes the primary threat to freedom and democracy at home?
Donald Trump. Seriously. Donald Trump uses phrases like, you're going to eviscerate the Constitution. He's going to be a dictator on day one. The idea that he would sit in the office, and I'll show you before you leave, off the Oval Office, and watch for hours the attack on the Capitol, and the destruction and the mayhem and the people were killed, the police officers who died, and call them political heroes, call them patriots, and saying that if he gets elected, he's going to free them all because they're being held illegally. I mean, it's just, and think of the things he says. Look at the way he talks about minority populations, Hispanics, you know, we're talking about them being, anyway, it's just, it's, I can't think of any other time in my lifetime, in history that's occurred, that you've had somebody who's had this kind of attitude. He says he's going to be a dictator on day one. No one doesn't believe him.
Mm-hmm. All of that is a bunch of BS, obviously, but it's a guy who has nothing to run on, so he's trying to run on fear. Remember, I told you in politics, you either get people to vote for you or vote against your opponent. That's how you do it. You either get them motivated to vote for you or you try to scare them away from voting against your opponent, for your opponent, by voting for you. And that's it. And that's the strategy Joe Biden's employing. By the same thing, be very, very afraid. There was a story recently I saw, you know, white rural rage. This is a thing. This is a thing with Democrats now. Somebody, I guess last week or the week before, talked about the white rural rage. Like all these angry white people out there. There was a piece in Politico about this, and they said, you know, the white rural rage narrative gets the research wrong. And the guy who wrote this did the research. His name is Nicholas Jacobs. He's a political scientist. He teaches American politics and research methods at Colby College. And he wrote a book called The Rural Voter, The Politics of Place and the Dismantling of America. And he said, you know, like recently there was an interview on MSNBC's Morning Joe. And this this guy, Tom Schaller, was on. He wrote a book called White Rural Rage. And the thesis of this argument is that despite representing just 16% of the American electorate, this white rural rage is a threat to the world's oldest constitutional democracy. He gave an interview on MSNBC recently, and he said that there's rage overflowing in the heartland. Rural whites are the most racist, xenophobic, anti-immigrant, anti-gay, geodemographic group in the country. In fact, this guy called them the most conspiratorist, anti-democratic, white nationalist, white Christian nationalist. He went on to say rural whites are also most likely to excuse or justify violence as an acceptable alternative to peaceful public discourse. Now, a lot of people who live in rural America were upset by that, obviously. Amanda Marcotte, writing for Salon, said she's tired of handling rural voters with kid gloves. The time has come to pop the racist, homophobic, sexist bubble they all live in. Daily Beast columnist Michael Cohen agreed, writing that these aren't hurtful elitist stereotypes. They're facts. David Korn, the D.C. bureau chief of Mother Jones, piled on, agreeing that white rural voters are the slice of the public that endangers the constitutional future of the republic. Of course, the latest obsession with white rural rage is nothing new. After 2016, when rural voters in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania put former President Donald Trump over the top, Democrats tried to figure out why they had gone so sour on the Democrat Party. Some liberal thinkers called out the left's reflexive dismissal of rural voters. And they talked about that, how they just dismissed these people. I mean, Hillary Clinton's campaign, remember, basket of deplorables. Barack Obama talking about people clinging to their guns and Bibles. Condescending in every single way, in every single manner. But there's something else, too, he points out, which is that the Democrat Party lost working class voters. They lost working class Americans. So you remember yesterday I shared with you this story from Pittsburgh, how the voters out there, and this was in the Wall Street Journal, the voters outside of Pittsburgh, these are people that work in the energy sector. They're all voting for Trump. In fact, one guy who voted for Biden in 2020 said he would never vote Democrat ever again because he's tired of these people trying to kill their jobs. He's tired of it. Remember, I've also told you recently that James Carville said that the Democrat Party today has become the party of coastal elites and the faculty lounge. They hate the flyover states. They always have. And they hate you if you live in one. They hate you. They mock you. They put you down. But they're doing something even worse now. I mean, for years, people in the flyover states, as they're called, had to deal with the fact that they were kind of mocked and called rubes and everything else. Now they're accusing you of being downright dangerous. Downright dangerous. That you are fomenting the next January 6th. That you, with all your hatred and your rage and everything else, and this is not just flyover states. I mean, this is also rural parts of Pennsylvania, rural parts of New Jersey. There are rural parts of Delaware. There are rural parts of Maryland. There are also, of course, rural parts of America, rural states where, you know, you have to fly over them. And that's where that term flyover comes from. But for years, they've just mock them, you know, like, oh, they're all a bunch of hillbillies in them flyover states. Oh, those rural types, you know, sleeping with their sister and their sister's cousin, whatever it is. Now it's you are a hateful bigot and you are going to destroy democracy. That's what these people said. So the guy writing this piece who did the research, he said the people doing the work of protecting democracy in rural America recognized this hatred immediately. The morning of the MSNBC interview, I woke up to a mountain of messages and threads from rural organizers, community activists, and local officials across the country. Each one was distressed over what they considered the author's harsh and hurtful accusations about the communities they cherish and strive to uplift. What seemingly set this book apart is that the authors claim to have data backing up their assertions. So remember, the book is called White Rage. These guys go on MSNBC and start talking about how all these white people in rural America are just nothing but hateful bigots, hate gay people. They hate everybody. They hate immigrants. They hate everybody. And they want to just take over the country and lead about the revolution. But the research that these people used in the book, White Rage, is from the guy who wrote this article in Politico. During the interview on MSNBC, the authors of the book, White Rage, said, we provide the receipts. What is their data? Why do they get it so wrong? Imagine my surprise, he says, when I picked up the book and saw that some of that research was mine. I'm an academic who studies rural America and lives in rural Maine. My job and passion is to pore over. You have the audio of that? Oh, great. Okay, you have the audio of that. Excellent. This was the University of Maryland professor. We talked about this. I guess it was a month ago, right? I think it was.
March 14th, I think.
And this is where I said I hate the University of Maryland for so many reasons. Three reasons. Number one, the basketball team broke my heart again this year. Number two, I'll never forget the woman who broke my heart in my freshman year at Easton Hall. And number three is they hire kooks like this to be professors. Now, I never had a professor like this when I was there. Thank God. Sorry, I just need a minute to think about her for a second. You know, years later, she'd call me, right? She did. Years later. Rejected me in the mid-90s when grunge was cool and flannel was all the rage, only to call me back in the mid-aughts, tell me how wrong she was. It was too late.
Was that after you were famous?
No, well before. No. I mean, it was, you know. But she recognized the error in her ways. They always do, Matt. They always do. Sorry, it's hurting a little too close to home right now, this segment.
Do you need a tissue? Or?
No, I'm good. Okay. I'm good. I'm good. Just keep hearing Pearl Jam Black in my head over and over again. Anyway, I'm good. It's allergies. Whoa, friggin' allergies this time of year. Telling you.
I'll get you some water.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Clamped with the pollen and the whatnot. So the University of Maryland also hires kooks like Thomas Schaller, who co-wrote the book White Rage. And if you remember, we played this clip for you a couple weeks ago. Take a listen.
Why are white rural voters a threat to democracy at this point? You would think, as we pointed out, looking at Joe Biden's background and Donald Trump's, that the opposite would be true.
I mean, we lay out the fourfold interconnected threat that white rural voters pose to the country. First of all, and we show 30 polls and national studies to demonstrate this. So we provide the receipts in Chapter 6. They're the most racist, xenophobic, anti-immigrant, anti-gay geodemographic group in the country. Second, they're the most conspiracist group. QAnon support and subscribers, election denialism, COVID denialism, and scientific skepticism, Obama birtherism. Third, anti-democratic sentiments. They don't believe in an independent press, free speech. They're most likely to say the president should be able to act unilaterally without any checks from Congress or the courts or the bureaucracy. They're also the most strongly white nationalist and white Christian nationalist. And fourth, they are most likely to excuse or justify violence as an acceptable alternative to peaceful public discourse.
So you mentioned a lot of negative factors about this demographic.
And they say they back it up with research. Well, the guy who did the research is the one who wrote this article for Politico. And he says white rage doesn't exist. And this is the thing. He writes this piece to justify, to clarify here that the authors of this book, and what you just heard, that lunatic professor from Maryland, what you just heard, and thank God I never had guys like, never had professors like that in my, honestly, thank God. But he said they are taking his research all wrong. He says, look, I'm an academic. I study rural Americans and I live in rural Maine. My job and passion is to pore over reams of data, including some of the largest surveys of rural voters ever conducted. Sitting on my computer are detailed responses from over 25,000 rural voters that I have conducted over the last decade and used to publish a range of peer-reviewed and widely cited research. And I've done it all largely to make sense of why rural voters are continually drawn to the Republican Party. But here's the thing about rage. I've never found it. The problem with this rage thesis is much larger than the fact that my research and that of others is being misinterpreted and misunderstood. What the authors are getting wrong about rural America is exactly what many Democrats have been getting wrong for decades and appear to be doing so again in this critical presidential year. Beyond the weaknesses of this one book and the prospects of another deeply divisive election, this new rage thesis worries me. Academics can and do disagree on what is motivating non-college educated whites to vote for Donald Trump. I don't pretend that we have settled on a single answer. I do know that there is something particular about Trump's appeal in rural America and that demographics alone do not explain it. In rural America, women are more likely to vote for Trump. So are young people. So are poor as well as rich. Place matters. But ruralness is not reducible to rage. And to say so is to overlook the nuanced ways in which rural Americans engage in politics. They are driven by a sense of place, community, and often a desire for recognition and respect. This is, as I have recently argued in a new book, the defining aspect of the rural-urban divide. A sense of shared fate among rural voters, what academics call a politics of place, that is expressed as a belief in self-reliance, rooted in local community and concern that rural ways of living will soon be forced to disappear. Now, let me just jump out from his piece for a moment and say, you know, when you hear rural ways of living, if you are a person who is a common sense person, you would think to yourself, well, what he means by that, of course, is he means the sense of community, everybody knowing each other, safe communities, people have guns. Yeah, people go to church, people work locally, they support their local businesses, all those values of that are different from the city. In those areas, there's a much more emphasis on having parents involved in education. They're very leery of having the state indoctrinate their kids. They're probably not having things like COVID shot mandates. They probably weren't masking up beyond the first initial couple of weeks of COVID. They probably didn't subscribe to all of the things that the blue intelligentsia dictated. And for example, I mean, take New Jersey. King Philip the Unaccountable, his royal ruggedness. When he put out all his edicts for how we were supposed to govern ourselves and live our lives, I mean, drive through Cumberland County, go down and talk to my buddy Mike Testa, talk to my buddy Ed Durr in Salem County, talk to, my friends there in Gloucester County, talk to them, and they will tell you that the people there said they didn't want anything to do with it. Like, they didn't want anything to do with it. It's frustrating. But of course, in the cities, they all comply because it's a thing for them. They walk around wearing a mask on. It's like a badge of honor. Like, look at me. You know, I've got this mask and I want to show everybody I'm virtue signaling. You ask my buddy Steve Pacerduni, who's a mechanic, you know, in Gloucester County, he was fighting against the COVID mandates and lockdowns and everything else. But on the left, they would consider you an idiot if you did not go along with it like a sheep. So when they hear rural, they think things like you want to go back to women in handmade outfits, and you want to go back to when they had outhouses, and you want to go back to when men could have multiple wives. The truth is, nobody wants multiple wives because you have multiple mothers-in-law. And that's the truth. Sorry, I'm watching the show Under the Banner of Heaven right now on Hulu. Have you seen it yet? Based on the John Krakauer book?
Like while you're doing the show?
No, I'm not watching at the moment. I mean, okay. I'm
multitasking.
It's like impressive. It's a good monologue.
Listen, I can multitask like the best of them, but I'm not that good, all right? Besides, I'm distracted by Dana Perino right now, so. She's talking about some transgender ban from women's sports. I'll get to that in a second. But anyway, so they think rural in terms of you being a freaking hick and a hillbilly. And that's how they thought about it for years. But you're anti-science. You reject science, right? You don't believe in science. That's why they so proudly put on their lawn signs that we believe in science. And they're belittling you. They're mocking you. They think you're an idiot. You listen to Rush Limbaugh. You listen to conservative talk radio. You listen to me. You're the Zioli Army. You wear a Zioli Army shirt. You know, you're... But now they've doubled down on all that, and they've said, now you are a danger. You're dangerous. You're dangerous to America. And if you notice, it plays at the exact same time that the Attorney General of the United States, Merrick Garland, has come out and did what? Came out and said the biggest threat to America is domestic violent extremism. You know, the moms in yoga pants that I talk about all the time, who were the ones speaking out at the school board meetings and were called terrorists, where the letter was written by the FBI saying, we're watching you. You remember that letter that Merrick Garland put out? Do you think he was talking about moms in cities? No, moms in rural areas. But it's not just rural, it's also suburban too. But let's focus on rural for a moment. Rural parts of the country, rural areas of populated states, rural areas of Pennsylvania, where, yeah, you had moms in yoga pants yelling at school board meetings because they wanted their kids back in school. And they were considered to be potential domestic violent extremists. What about the people that go to mass every Sunday or pray outside of pro-life clinics? Do you think they're mostly in the cities or are they in rural areas? What has happened recently with the Department of Justice and the FBI? They've described these people as potential domestic violent extremists. You pray in Latin, you just might be a terrorist. They've been doing this for years. Barack Obama, ever since clinging to your guns and Bibles, basket of deplorables, but now they've upped the ante. Now you are the threat. And what else has happened recently? Well, they've expanded their spying on us. They've started profiling us, looking at our credit card receipts. I told you how they looked at how if you go to Cabela's, buy a fishing hat, you know, the Department of Justice gets all those credit card receipts and they're profiling you because they've decided that people who shop at Cabela's could be a January 6th extremist. Where are most Cabela's located? In cities or rural areas? See, I think there's a tie in here. The brilliance, of course, of what I offer to you every day for 4 hours. And I'm not saying that because I'm brilliant, although I am. As Kristen learned many years later from rejecting me at the University of Maryland my freshman year. Don't be like Kristen. I'm sorry.
That should be a shirt. We should give those out.
That should be a shirt. That's the shirt right there. We
don't
got it.
Don't be like Kristen.
Don't be a Kristen. We had Karen, and don't be a Kristen. Don't be a Kristen. Because when you come back 10 years later, I'm not taking you back. Sorry. It's not how I operate. I'm an alpha. It's not how we do things. I digress. The point is that what I'm tying together here is that all this insistence on this white rage is coming at the exact same time the Department of Justice and the FBI are profiling you, particularly if you live in rural areas. And they're trying to push this narrative that you are dangerous. You're a threat to America and a threat to American democracy. And it's also coming at the same time that they're saying that Donald Trump is all those things, too. It's ironic, too, because where did Donald Trump live? New York City, right? Donald Trump's ability to reach out and connect to rural voters wasn't because they were impressed by his fancy New York City address. It was because Donald Trump didn't go there and belittle them. Donald Trump didn't look down on them. He never did. He was a populist, billionaire, but a populist nonetheless. He was a guy who would fly in 2015 to rural parts of New Hampshire and have huge rallies with people. And they would come out and cheer him on. He'd be wearing suits that cost more than many of them took home for a week. But he didn't look down on them. He didn't mock them and belittle them. And instead of the left recognizing that and turning around and going, you know, we got a problem here. Like, maybe we should stop mocking people. Remember, I played you the clip yesterday of Jamie Dimon saying, why don't we stop insulting MAGA? Why don't we stop insulting Trump voters? Instead of Democrats learning from that, they've doubled down on it. They've doubled down on it. And they've upped the ante. So now you're not just a hillbilly or a deplorable. You're now a danger. You're a domestic violent extremist. You're the next insurrectionist. And that's also done on purpose. These two things are happening at the same time. The white rage is a myth. It doesn't exist. It's not real. The guy who did the research is saying this. Yes, there's a resentment, a collective grievance against experts, bureaucrats, intellectuals, and the political party that seeks to empower them. And what is the political party that seeks to empower bureaucrats, intellectuals, and the political elite, the experts, the Faucis, the Francis Collins? It's the Democrat Party. Who's the party that was pushing vaccine mandates, mask mandates, school closures, shutdowns, stay-at-home orders, lockdown orders? Who was the party doing that? Democrat Party. And who was the party that was wrong at all those things? The Democrat Party. Who's the party that tells you they know better than you as a parent what your kid needs? And who's the party that tells you as a parent you don't have a right to know if your kid, your son goes to school and identifies as a girl? Democrat Party. They're the ones who tell you you have no right to know that. Resentment is a real phenomenon in rural areas. But words matter, he says. Rage and resentment are not interchangeable terms. Rage implies irrationality. Anger that is unjustified and out of proportion. You can't talk to someone who is enraged. Resentment is a rational reaction based on some sort of negative experience. You may not agree that someone has been treated unfairly, but there is room to empathize. Research, both by me and by others, he says, has illustrated how resentment is driven by the complex rural identity that, while occasionally intersecting with national political currents, is rooted in the unique context of rural life. Rage, both as a soundbite and as presented in the book, White Rage, oversimplifies and misrepresents these debates. And so does the assumption that all the holders of these views are white and that this rage is motivated by racism. He says racism exists in all parts of the country and is embedded in American politics, but what the research shows is that while there are deep and persistent racial resentments in rural communities, despite a slight correlation between the two, rural resentment is an attitude distinct from racial prejudice. In other words, even if there are racists living in rural areas, because they're not living in the city necessarily, it doesn't mean that rural areas are racist. Just because somebody lives in a neighborhood doesn't mean that the neighborhood is racist. That's the point of that. Are there racists out there? Yes. Does it mean the whole neighborhood is racist? No. Does it mean that the entire community is? No. But what are Democrats saying? Every one of you is a racist threat to the republic. It's funny how they use the term republic when it's convenient to them, is it not? You notice that? Republicans are the political party, he says, that have figured out how to speak to that rural identity effectively. And how do they do that? Well, think of the story I told you yesterday. You have these guys up in Pittsburgh, right? All these men and women who work in the energy sector who have turned around and said, I'm sick and tired of Democrats trying to take my job. They want to shut down my job. They went after the coal industry. Remember the time Hillary Clinton went down to whatever she went to? I think it was West Virginia. She put on a fake accent. I know, Bo. We're going to get you retrained and learn how to lay cable. And Bill Clinton is going to teach you how to lay cable. That's a different kind of laying. That's laying pipe. That's a different thing. Laying pipe for broadband cables. is what the Clintons wanted. They wanted the workers to do that. You know what I mean? And she tried. You know, I know. Remember she took out hot sauce in front of black voters. Remember that, to try to show her street cred? She had hot sauce. Remember that? They don't know how to speak to people. They're elites. They don't understand rural residents, black or white. They don't get it. They can't figure out how to speak. But what the key is that they've done more to hurt them and take away their jobs than any other political party, and also tell them how to live their life, and also mock them and belittle them when there's any pushback. And going so far now as to say, if there's pushback, we're going to look at you as a domestic violent extremist. Paul Krugman, who's a jerk, is often quick to point out that because rural America is poorer than urban America, it pays much less per person in federal taxes. So in practice, major metropolitan areas hugely subsidize the countryside. And it is true that the Biden administration is currently overseeing billions in new federal spending that is disproportionately going to rural communities across America. But the problem is Democrats have not been able to solve not the policy issue, it's the politics. And when they keep yelling about rage and when they keep screaming and making this up, they are blowing their chances at bringing back these voters. The authors of the book White Rural Rage, have no expertise in rural issues. They conducted no original research for the book. They approached the topic as journalists and committed the same errors countless reporters have made when they share with the outside world what they saw from a few days of traversing some small town in flyover country, an occurrence all the more routine as local newspapers in rural America shut her down. Didn't we have a story recently, Matt, about the guy? It was, I'm trying to think of the outlet it was, that they were defending the swamp, the deep state. You remember? It was before I left on vacation. Mm. And they were defending, in defense of the deep state was the name of the article. And it might have been NPR, actually. And they went down there and they met with all these nice people.
That was
people.
The New York Times. It was a video.
The New York Times. Yeah. Yes, you're right. And do you remember they went there and they said, these are the people in the swamp, the deep state. Like that New York Times reporter, he was like, we're in Alabama. I guess we'll get me some chicken and waffles. Remember? Like these people have never been to these areas before. And they're shocked by them when they go there. It's like going to the zoo for them for the first time. It was like when Reagan saw a dolphin for the first time. She's like, do they eat me, Dad? Like, no, honey, no. That's how these New York Times reporters are when they go to these rural places to cover a story. Like, what is this, dirt? I don't understand this. Why don't these people pave this? What is that? What is that over there? A barn? And then they spent a weekend there and they think they understand the people. It's amazing. And this is the other problem, too. The logical fallacy of composition when they attribute group characteristics to individuals. For example, they suggest that since authoritarianism predicted support for Donald Trump in the 2016 Republican primaries and rural residents support Trump, rural residents are the most likely to be authoritarian. As it happens, the opposite seems to be true. You find in rural areas, they are much more likely to believe in personal freedom. They don't want authoritarianism, as we all know. But authors and people in the media and all these other people are shocked by that because they go, whoa, these people must want this authoritarian monster named Donald Trump because they love tyrants. Bottom line is this, the threats to democracy just aren't there. The research found that just 27% of rural voters, including 23% of rural Trump voters, think that if the opposing candidate wins in November, people will need to take drastic action in order to stop Biden or Trump from taking office. That is the exact same proportion, 27%, as voters in urban and suburban areas who hold the same view. And did you notice what I just said? Democrats and Republicans, they both have that same view, but it's a slim group. It's 27%, 23%. In fact, more Democrats believe something dire has to be done to stop Trump than rural Republican voters think something dire has to be done to stop Biden if he wins a second term. If you look at the numbers, more Democrats believe something dire has to be done if Trump wins than what rural white rage America thinks should be done if Trump loses. Anyway, there's a lot more to say on this to go on, but the key is this point. Every time they mock you, every time they insult you, every time they call you a deplorable, every time now they call you a potential domestic violent extremist, just remember they're doing this because they don't understand you. And they have no interest in trying to understand you because they hate you. And they think they're better than you. They think they're smarter than you. And they think you need to get in line and do whatever you're told. And since people in rural areas don't like to be told what to do, they are never, ever going to like you. So don't worry about it. You don't need them anyway. 855-839-1210 on Twitter at Rich Zeoli. Listen, my buddy, Dr. Mike Veneri, is going to give you a great smile. He's a great dentist. He is the master of dental implants, and he's the master of making you look and feel your greatest with a million-dollar smile. I recommend you book an appointment with Dr. Mike today. I've been telling you about Dr. Mike for years. My entire family goes to Dr. Veneria because the level of care and commitment to dental excellence is outstanding. You have a choice, a clear choice for you and your family, so give Dr. Veneria a call. I promise you won't be disappointed. With two locations to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury, schedule your free implant consultation today for your perfect smile. Call 856-786-2020, 856-786-2020, or visit VeneriaDental.com, V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VeneriaDental.com. Do it today and get the smile you deserve, VeneriaDental.com.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about this
I feel
bathroom?
Like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything
taken
care of.
It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
The Zeoli Show on your schedule from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT in the free Odyssey app.
All righty. I'll give you an example. This is Hillary Clinton trying to pretend like she can relate to black voters with her hot sauce. Take a listen to this.
What's something that you always carry with you?
Hot sauce.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you getting information right now?
That was her on with Charlamagne the God, trying to pretend like she's a real person. Like she's a real, you know, just carries hot sauce around. Then there was a time that she was down there, and I'm trying to find the clip of her saying, I know, Bo, but I can't find that. But I have this one of Bill Clinton, which is kind of emblematic, I think, of everything.
It's the coal people.
The coal people. That's what he called them, the coal people. Like the rising from coal, like you got to kill them. The coal people are rising up, you know what I mean?
They just come out of the ground.
Yeah, it's the coal people coming up. Let me find that. Where is it?
The coal people.
Everybody, get together. We got to kill them. The coal people. They're coming out of the mountain. Oh, it's here it is. This one.
I know that, Bo.
I know that, Bo. I know that. And man, I know you don't shower either, you little hillbilly you. But now they say you're a domestic violent extremist. So, I mean, it's fun to make jokes, but at the same time, it's not fun if you are in the crosshairs of the government of the United States of America. And that is exactly what I'm talking about. The reason why they started the House Select Subcommittee on the Weaponization of Government, the reason why they have exposed all of this is because let's think about the last couple of years, shall we? Let's think about how you were profiled and blocked and censored if you said you didn't want lockdowns, you didn't want mask mandates, COVID came from a lab. If you came out and you said the Hunter Biden laptop was real. And now if you support Trump or you buy guns or you buy ammunition or you buy fishing hats or you buy Bibles or you do any of these things, they're profiling you because you could be a domestic violent extremist. Because just like how white rural rage is a fugazi, it does not exist. Domestic violent extremism is a fugazi. Now, I'm not saying there are not militia people out there. I'm not saying that there's not a dude sitting somewhere in a cabin in Montana who wants to take his, you know, take my country back. I'm not saying that that person doesn't exist. I'm saying the guy's not going to do anything unless you have people who are undercover FBI operatives like they did in Michigan who go in there and lead the guy towards trying to kidnap Gretchen Whitmer. So it's a fugazi, and there's a demand and the supply is not there. So what happens whenever there's a demand for something and there's not enough supply? You have to find it. You got to make the supply. And that's what the government's doing by profiling and saying that this group could be a domestic violent extremist and that group could be and you could be. And here you were just thinking, I'm a mom at a school board meeting. But I don't want to have the FBI come to my house and I don't want to do these things. So then they intimidate you into silence. The other reason why they keep bringing this stuff up, white rural rage, is because nobody wants to be called homophobic. Nobody wants to be called a racist. Nobody wants to be called a conspiracy theorist. They do these things on purpose to shut you up so that you just stop. Stop giving them a hard time so the elites can run this place and the swamp can get what they want. Why do you think they scream about how you're supporting Putin if you don't want any more money to go to Ukraine? That article from a couple months ago from the New York Times where they went to Alabama, I think it was, and this time they talked to residents there who at the very, very start of the Russia invasion all supported Ukraine, and now they've noticed how everybody wants to stop sending money over there. And what they couldn't understand was that people don't want money going over there, even though they live in a military town, because they know they can't, this is not winnable, and they don't want to see their money going overseas anymore. But nobody wants to be called a Putin sympathizer. So they want you to shut up because the military industrial complex needs that money coming in. And nobody wants to be called an anti-immigrant racist. So they want you to shut up and get out of their way when they allow open borders to keep coming because that's how they're going to change this country. All of these things they're doing, these are not accidents. Language matters. These people don't say these things by accident. So now that I've shared with you that the author of the research has said that these guys are wrong, I want to play that clip one more time for you. This guy, this idiot, University of Maryland professor, who got it as wrong as Kristen did in the mid-90s. But unlike Kristen, this guy will never admit he got it wrong. She did, though, one day when she called me. And years later. But sorry, it's allergies. Hay fever's killing me. Oh,
I'm going to give you a minute. I'll play this clip. You can collect yourself.
All right, it's good. Okay. It's all right. But unlike Kristen, this guy will never admit he's wrong. But he's wrong, and he took the research completely out of it. And when, for example, the guy who did the research says, on specific issues, politics would acknowledge that rural and non-rural Trump voters see issues through different lenses, even if come election day they are voting the same way. You have to talk to them differently. On immigration, it would mean accepting the fact that in some communities, particularly those with financial challenges, concerns about the social burden of immigration is not always an expression of hate. It would look at a data point on distrust in media and seek out a reason, perhaps a self-critical one, for why rural people are the most likely to feel like news does not portray their communities accurately. It would speak directly to the challenge posed by artificial intelligence and technological progress that, once again, will likely concentrate benefits among those who have already benefited and leave rural communities behind. It will see the moral costs as well as the economic costs of those developments, the end to heritage industries, the pollution of the land, the erasure of rural dignity, and recognize how demoralizing it is to be told that they should just learn to code. And it would give agency back to the 1 in 5 Americans who call rural areas home. Not through a lengthy list of policy correctives, he says, but through a politics of empathy and shared authorship and civic engagement. Is that really so hard? Biden tells coal miners to learn to code. Do you remember when that happened? It was at a rally at a coal mining town in Appalachia. We say Appalachia or Appalachia. Who the hell cares? Whatever. It was Derry, New Hampshire. I'm sorry. Spoke to a crowd in Derry, New Hampshire, town many miners call home. He acknowledged the economic setbacks and job insecurity that coal miners face these days. These are the, just in case you're wondering,
the coal people.
That's right. And he said, quote, anybody who can go down 3,000 feet in a mine can sure as hell learn to program as well. Anybody who can throw coal into a furnace can learn how to program, for God's sake. The comment was met with silence from the audience. So you see what they do? They mock and belittle and put you down and call you a racist and call you all these things. So once more time, go ahead. Here's that professor.
Why are white rural voters a threat to democracy at this point? You would think, as we pointed out, looking at Joe Biden's background and Donald Trump's, that the opposite would be true.
I mean, we lay out the fourfold interconnected threat that white rural voters pose to the country. First of all, and we show 30 polls and national studies to demonstrate this. So we provide the receipts in Chapter 6. They're the most racist, xenophobic, anti-immigrant, and anti-gay geodemographic group in the country. Second, they're the most conspiracist group. QAnon support and subscribers, election denialism, COVID denialism and scientific skepticism,
COVID denialism.
Obama birtherism. Third, anti-democratic sentiments. They don't believe in an independent press, free speech. They're most likely to say the president should be able to act unilaterally without any checks from Congress or the courts or the bureaucracy. They're also the most strongly white nationalist and white Christian nationalist. And fourth, they are most likely to excuse or justify violence as an acceptable alternative to peaceful public discourse.
So you mentioned a lot of negative factors about this demographic.
And by the way, just since my allergy doctor, Dr. Lania, is listening, it's not really allergies. In fact, I got my allergy shot today. A little itchy, but she does a great job. Cooper, baby. Cooper University Healthcare and the great work that they do. But this is the top story of the day brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Veneria. VeneriaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile. Democrats are going to lose again. They're going to lose the election because the people in Pittsburgh, the coal people, the steel people, the natural gas people all know that Democrats are coming for their jobs in the name of climate change. And if you listen to that jackass professor, you hear him say things like people are more likely to be science deniers. What is that code for? That means you're standing in their way of fighting climate change by your opposition to ending natural gas, by your opposition to banning gas stoves and banning gas cars. You are standing in the way of their utopia. Their socialist utopia. You're getting in the way. You being against open borders, you're getting in the way of them changing the demographic of this country. And I don't mean by complexion. I mean by voting, by getting people here and then handing them money and getting them to vote for Democrats. You being against mask mandates or vaccine mandates, particularly for your children, is COVID denialism. You hear that? So when they say these things and you hear and then you reference the article I shared with you yesterday, you got all these voters outside of Pittsburgh who are saying, I will never vote Democrat ever again. These used to be the working class people that voted Democrat. They were the working class coalition of Democrats like Ed Rendell and Bob Casey Sr. of days gone by. These guys know this Democrat Party is coming for their jobs, all in the name of climate change. The parents in these areas, they know the Democrats are coming for their kids. Literally, wanting to groom their children and take away the right of the parents to be able to make decisions for their children and to be able to ensure that a biological man can get in the pool and swim against their daughter and beat her for a title under the guise of women's athletics. And of course, the elites, the intelligentsia, the elites, the coastal elites, the cities, the academic faculty lounges are the ones using the term Latinx and ticking off Hispanic voters, which is part of the reason why Hispanic voters are now with Donald Trump. Trump is leading with Hispanic voters. And I'm telling you right now, a big part of that is because they don't want to be called Latinx. And they're also people who are, they have conservative values. And they're sick and tired of the nuttiness of the left, of how extreme they've gone by turning around and saying that a five-year-old who's a boy is probably really a girl if he picks up a doll and should probably be immediately put on drugs and have his schwanz chopped off when he's 13. So, yeah, you know what? I mean, you can be called a science denier, but actually you're just somebody who believes in biology. But then again, to circle back to something I said in the 3 o'clock hour, remember NPR, National Public Radio, does not allow the terms biological sex to be used when discussing transgender issues. So think about that from the people that consider you and accuse you of being anti-science. Listen, we're going to be live at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, coming up this May 3rd. May 3rd, I'm so excited. I can't wait. And we're going to be back in June 21st. So if you want to de-stress, enjoy life, take in the ocean air, and make lifetime memories with your friends and family, then you should book a getaway at my happy place, the beautiful oceanfront Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. Book now, a June midweek stay, and you're going to save. Stay 3 nights and get $60 a night in resort credit. Stay 5 nights and get $70 a night in resort credit. Stay 7 nights and receive $80 a night in resort credit. Use your resort credits to make purchases of food and beverages in Hemingway's restaurant, the oceanfront or the outdoor pool bar, the beach concession stand, or in the gift shop where you can get passes for a whale-watching boat cruise. Book direct with them for the best rates. The Grand is also the perfect place to host a wedding, corporate event, baby and bridal shower. With four ballrooms, they have the perfect space to make lifetime memories. Just call and ask to talk to my friend Caitlin, and she will help you have your dream event. To book your stay today at the Oceanfront Grand Hotel of Cape May, call 800-257-8550 or visit them online at grandhotelcapemay.com. Trust me, you're going to love it there. And I want to see you there May 3rd. It's my happy place for a reason, because it's a beautiful, wonderful place to stay. GrandHotelCapeMay.com.
Rich Zeoli, weekday afternoons, 3 to 7. Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, and on the free Odyssey app.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too. What,
you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.